So we are holding on Chof Aleph Amud Aleph top line. So finishing off the discussion on Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara that we were having, we mentioned a number of different Mishnayos and Braisos with the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua on the question of what you're allowed to do with Truma Tahora versus Tmeya versus Tluya in terms of burning them, in terms of if you have Truma Tluya, what you're allowed to do as far as, are you allowed to make it Tame, or are you only allowed to indirectly cause it to be Tame? But on the other hand, you have a case where it's going to become Tame and it's going to ruin the chulin that it's falling into. We have the case of a barrel of wine of Truma that broke in the upper part of the wine press, where if it's going to flow down into the bottom one where there's chulin Tmeim, it's going to aser the whole thing because Truma Tmeya is completely aser. And therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says that if you're not able to even save a revius of it, Batara, then go ahead and be Matame it, be a daim in order to avoid the hefs and merubah, in order to avoid the great loss that'll be caused by it flowing down into the bottom one. On the other hand, we said that Rabbi Yeshua would say, on the other hand, when it comes to oil, it's not so, because if the oil flows in and all becomes Truma Tmeya, then it's not as big a deal, because oil you can use for lighting. Oil you can use for lighting, so therefore it's not as much of a hefsid as you would have with wine, where we discussed, according to some opinions, if it's wine, if it's new wine, and you would have to keep it around in order to wait until it ages, and only then could you use it for sprinkling around your house. We don't want to do that because of the problem of takala that you may forget, meanwhile, that you're not allowed to eat it because it's tame, and you may end up drinking it. With oil, you can avoid that by putting it in a dirty container. So now the Gemara is going to mention another factor in this as well. So far what we're saying is Rabbi Yeshua is concerned about a hefsid meruba, about a great loss. For example, in the case of wine, he's less concerned about a hefsid mort, where there's only a minor loss, as would be the case with oil, where after all you can use it for lighting, so therefore it's not so bad. Also, Rabbi Yeshua is not concerned about, for example, in the case of our Mishnah, when it comes to, according to Rabbi Yossi anyway, according to Rabbi Yossi's understanding of Rabbi Yeshua is not concerned about the minor loss that you might have, that you're going to have to make two separate piles to burn your Truma Tluya and your Truma Tahora, rather, and Truma Tmeya, where you're going to need separate wood for each one. That's also a Hefsid Mort, and Rabbi Yeshua doesn't care about that. So now we're going to have another factor. Amr Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Machloikis, the whole Machloikis Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer about, again, the case going back to the wine, where you have a barrel of wine of Truma that was Tahor, broke in the upper part of the wine press, and now it's going to flow down into the lower part where there are chulin tmeim. That would be shenofla pachas mimeyasa chulin tmeim. That would be if it's falling into less than 100 sa of chulin tmeim, not necessarily 100 sa, but in other words, 100 times as much. Chulin is bottle in, rather, truma is bottle in chulin if you have 100 times as much chulin. So if the barrel, so let's say the barrel holds a saw, then you're talking 100 saw. If you're talking, let's say the barrel held a gallon, then you'd have to be talking about 100 gallons, etc. The point is, but if the situation is that you have in the lower part of the wine press where it's going to flow into, you have anyway 100 times as much chulin tmeim as the amount in the barrel. So even if the entire contents of the barrel flows down in there, it's still going to be bottle. And once it's bottle, then you don't have a hefsid at all, because then it's bottle. And then the fact that it's tome is neither here nor there, because you're allowed to eat it then. You're allowed to eat chulin tmeim. Remember, you're not allowed to eat truma, which is tome, but if it's bottle, then it's not truma anymore. So therefore, divrei hakol, then everybody would agree, tated v'titame, that you have to allow it to flow down if you can't find kalim that are tahor to save it, ba'al yitam en biyad, rather than be matame it with your own bare hands. So when you have a hefsid involved, then a hefsid meruba, then Rabbi Yeshua is going to allow it. Because if you have, let's say, 99 or however many times as much chulin, the whole thing is going to become osur because it's truma tmeya, and neither Kayanim nor Yisraelim can drink it. Therefore, Rabbi Yeshua is going to allow you to be matame the wine that's in the upper part over there to prevent it from flowing down and ruining everything else. But where it's going to be bottled anyway, then we're not worried about that.
If he's holding a Torah Kaili.
If he's holding a Torah Kaili.
I'm not sure if he's tame or not, but let's say if it's hand tame or he's not sure, would that be?
So transfer? If the keli itself is tame, a person only if he's an ava truma is matame the keli. If he himself is only a rishon the truma, he's not matame the keli anyway. Then there's no problem, right?
You can catch it.
Right. Okay. So Tanya Namihochi, in fact, the Gemara says we learn a braisa like what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina says. Chavis shenishbur of a gas al yona. If a barrel breaks in the upper part of the wine press, v'tachteya meyach cholin tmein. Underneath it, in the lower part of the press, there's 100 times as much cholin which are tamei. Moider Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer will agree with Rabbi Yeshua. Sheim yochol lahatzav mener revias batara. That if you're able to save at least the revius of it in a condition of Tara, Yatzil, then you're obligated to, even though the rest of it is flowing down. And on the face of it, it's going to cause problems, but it's not going to cause problems because, again, it's going to be bottle. The Imlav, but if not, Teir Vititame, if not, then he also agrees, Teir Vititame, you have to allow it to go down and become Tame, but Al Yitame and Abiyad, also you shouldn't be Matame with your bare hands because, unlike in the other case, you're not going to lose because the Truma is going to be bottle in the Cholanim. So now the question is, on this last braisa, and actually the question is also on a braisa that we quoted before on Chofam Beis, in both those cases, or braisa about where you have wine but there's 100 times as much cholin, and previous braisa where we quoted about oil, where there's not much of a hefset at all, because again, fine, you can't use the oil for eating or drinking, but you can use it for lighting. In both of those braises, it used the expression, Rabbi Eliezer agrees with Rabbi Yeshua. Now, Rabbi Eliezer is the one who's machmir. Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says you can never be metame truma biyadai. Rabbi Yeshua is the one who says that sometimes. Rabbi Yeshua is the one who says that sometimes we can be maple. So the question is, why are we using the expression "Hai moider Rabbi Eliezer" or Rabbi Yeshua? What do you mean, Rabbi Eliezer agrees with Rabbi Yeshua that you must allow it to flow down. It's fine. It should be the other way around. Moider Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer should say the other way around. Rabbi Yeshua, who's makel in the case when it's wine and less than 100 times as much, but over here he's machmer. Over here he agrees with Rabbi Eliezer that you have to be machmer, that you can't be matame, that you can't touch it. So why are we saying Rabbi Eliezer agrees with Rabbi Yeshua? Omer Rava Epoch. So Rava says you're right. You have to flip it around. What it means is Rabbi Yeshua agrees with Rabbi Eliezer. Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua Amar Loy Lamlai Teipach. On the other hand, Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua says you don't have to flip it around because Hachab Maya Skinan Bekli Shetoichei Tahar Begabei Tomei. Because what we're talking about over here, when we say that Rabbi Eliezer agrees with Rabbi Yeshua, which we're asking, that seems to be backwards, we're actually not referring to the last case where we're saying that you have to allow it to flow down. We're talking about the earlier part where we're saying that if you're able to save a revius of it, the Tara, then Rabbi Eliezer is saying you have to do that. So Rabbi Eliezer, however, will agree with Rabbi Yeshua that we can be makel b'kli shetoichei Tahar Begabei Tomei. If you have available for this purpose a keli where the inside of it is tahor and the outside of it is tamei. Now, you have such a thing, midaraisa, there's no such thing. Midaraisa, a keli becomes tamei, it's tamei, that's that. But you have a case where a keli became tamei with mashkim, where, as we've been discussing before, according to most opinions, we said according to Rabbi Yehuda, a keli can become tamei from mashkim daraisa, but then we said Rabbi Yehuda himself changed his mind. So the end halacha is that a keli can become tamei from mashkim only d'rabbanan, and when that happens, when the chachamim imposed that rule that said that a keli can become tamei from mashkim, they made a distinction that if the keli becomes tamei only the outside, that the mashkim touched only the outside, then only the outside will become tamei. The chachamim made that distinction in order that we should realize that it's a tumah derabbanan and not think that it's a tumah deraisa and go burn tumah or kodshim that became tamei from such a case. So Rabbi Eliezer is agreeing with Rabbi Yeshua that if the keli you have available for that purpose to save the wine from flowing down happens to be one where the outside is tamei, you're allowed to use it. Now, why do we need to say that? Maudetema, you would have thought, nigzer, maybe we should be making a gzera, duma noga gabe bitruma. What if the outside of it touches the truma and then midrabanana will be matame it? Kamash malan, therefore, Rabbi Eliezer wants us to know, we're not worried about that. Given that you're trying to catch the wine in the inside of the container, then Rabbi Eliezer is willing to say, fine, I'm agreeing with you, Rabbi Yeshua. We can be matame truma biyadayim, even in a case like this. However, I do agree that we can use a keli where as long as the inside of it is tahor, you just have to make sure that the truma only touches the inside of it, and I'll agree that that will be an acceptable way of saving it rather than having to go look for a keli where both the inside and the outside are tahor. Hadron alach erla abasa. Now we finally get back to matters involving Pesach, per se, after the whole digression for the last seven, eight blot about the dinim of, about for the last seven blot about dinim of Tumah v'Tahara. So the most of the focus of our perek is going to be about the dinim of chametz itself. In the first perek, the first half of the perek until we got to the part about Tumah v'Tahara, we were mostly focusing on the dinim of what you have to do erev Pesach in terms of chametz. That you have to do bedikas chametz. When are the times to do bedikas chametz? Where you have to search. So we touched on things involving the issue of chametz, and we had the whole thing about, for example, that you're allowed to have chametz shalachedim mishal gavoya, that you're allowed to have chametz that belongs to goyim or that belongs to hektish in your house during Pesach and things like that. But now in our perek, we're going to be focusing mostly on the dinim of chametz itself. What exactly is usur and what is mutter in terms of having chametz around, and how you need to destroy it, and so forth.
Takeaway from the previous sugya that we learned for a long time is that you actually have to burn the truma. You have to burn separately.
So what we said is actually it depends whether we go according to the mayor or according to the yosi. According to the mayor, we will be allowed to burn truma tahora together with truma tmeya, because after all, it's all going to be burnt anyway, and therefore it doesn't much matter. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi had disagreed. Yes, the Rambam paskens like Rabbi Yossi that yes, you would actually have to burn them separately. In Perek Echad, you're up to in Perek Echad the Rambam. You're in Hilchos Chametz Matzah right now, aren't you?
Not Chametz
Matzah. Not yet.
Might.
Oh, you're in the Halachas of Chalamayit. Okay, yeah. But in a few days, you'll be getting to Hilchos Chametz Matzah, and yeah, you'll see over there that the Rambam paskens like Rabbi Yossi that the tluya and the tmeya can be burnt together, but not the tluya, but not the tmeya and the tahara.
Oh, okay.
So our Mishnah starts off kol shah shemuter lechol, throughout the time that you're allowed to still eat chametz on erev Pesach, machil behema l'chayo loifas, you're allowed to feed chametz to domestic animals or wild animals or birds. And we'll see in the Gemara why we have to mention each of them separately. Why can't we just say behema and it automatically includes anything? And also b'chal, we'll see what the real point is. Rashi says that there's not really that much of a chidush in that line, that as long as you can eat chametz, you can feed it to your animals. Obviously, if you can eat it, you can have enough from it. The implication is it's more meant for the implication the other way around. Once you're not allowed to eat it, you're also not allowed to feed it to animals. You shouldn't think, maybe, okay, I'm not allowed to eat it, but I'm still allowed to have hanah, or I'm allowed to feed it to animals, which will be destroying it as well. No, you can't. The whole time also that you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to sell it to a goy. We'll see in the Gemara what the chiddush of that is. And in general, you're allowed to have hanah from it, as we'll see in the Gemara what that's adding. On the other hand, once the time passes for eating chametz, also b'hana also, then it's also to have hanah from it anymore. And that includes, Tosfos says, at that point, you're not allowed to sell it to a goy. However, Tosfos says, if you were over and sold it to a goy, the money does not become also. Now, there is an opinion in Shulchan Aruch that says that the person himself who sold it to the goy is also to use that money as a knas, but anybody else would be allowed to use it. Because you have certain isurim that are tofus domov, where we say not only the thing itself is also, but if you sell it, then the money is also. One example being avodah zarah. If a Jew takes an avodah zarah and sells it, the money is also b'hana. There's a couple of other examples, but chametz is not like that. Anyway, so also b'hana, say v'lo yasik v'tanu v'chirayim, you're also not allowed to fire up an oven or a stove using the chametz. Now, obviously, that's hanah as well. So the Gemara is going to ask, what's the chiddush in that? So obviously, if you can't have hanah, then that includes that type of hanah as well. We'll see on Amud Beis. Continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ein Biur Chametz Ela Sreifa. Rabbi Yehuda says the only valid way of destroying chametz is by burning it, as we'll eventually see in the Gemara. We're going to have a long digression in the Gemara on different things involving Isurei Achila and Isurei Hanah or whatever. Eventually, we're going to get back to our Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to explain there why Rabbi Yehuda says you dafka have to burn it. The Chum say you don't need that. The Chum say you can also crumble it up and scatter it to the wind. Or you can throw it into the sea. And we'll see also in the Gemara, does that mean you have to crumble it if you're going to throw it into the wind, and also if you're going to throw it into the sea, you have to crumble it up first, or maybe not. Maybe you only need to crumble it if you're throwing it into the wind, but if you're throwing it into the sea, then you can just throw it as is. We'll see. We'll take up that point in the Gemara eventually on Daf Chav Zayin Chav Ches or so. I saw an interesting vote on this, by the way. It comes out that when it comes at between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, now the Chachamim agree, of course, you can burn chametz as well, which is what we do. It comes out that the ways of destroying chametz involve all of the four yesodis. You have fire, you can throw it to the wind, is air, is ruach. You can throw it into the water, and you're mevatel it and making a ka'afra da'ara, like the dust. So therefore, you have all four yesodis involved. So the Gemara starts off. When we say kol shor shemoto lechel machil, so we're saying as long as you're allowed to eat chametz, you're allowed to feed it to your animals. Now the implication is, again, like Rashi said, there's really not much of a chiddush in that line itself. The chiddush is the implication, ha kol shor she'enin moto lechel enin machil, implying once you're not allowed to eat it, then you're not allowed to feed it to animals. In that case, lema masnisin deloik Rabbi Yehuda. Does that mean we have to say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda? To eat Rabbi Yehuda. Now, we learned in the previous parak, we had the machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and also we had the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Meir had said you can eat chametz till the end of the fifth hour, and then you have to burn it at the beginning of the sixth. Rabbi Yehuda had said you can only eat till the end of the fourth hour, then the whole fifth hour it's suspended, you can't eat it, and only at the beginning of the sixth hour do you have to burn it. So our Mishnah can't be according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you have the fifth hour where you're not allowed to eat chametz, and yet, but yet, during that time, umachil, you're still allowed to feed it to animals. The Tanan, we learned in the previous parak. Rameyer says you can eat chametz the entire fifth hour, you have to burn it at the beginning of the sixth hour, which we said, daraisa, you only need to start burning it at the beginning of the seventh hour. Chatzos is when it becomes asur. Okay. But we said there's a problem. You might not be clear on the time. You might be cloudy, etc. And therefore, Rabbi Meir says you have to have an hour's safety margin. And Rabbi Yehuda and Oichlin Kolaba. Rabbi Yehuda says you can only eat till the end of the fourth hour because he's concerned you might be 2 hours off. But Tolan Kol Chomish, you can suspend it. It's suspended during the whole fifth hour, which includes that you can feed it to animals or sell it to a goy, etc. And you burn it at the beginning of the sixth hour. Now, we said over there in the Gemara that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So how all of a sudden do we have a Mishnah over here, a Stam Mishnah yet, and it's a Stam Mishnah after a Machlokas too. The usual rule is that when you have Machlokas v'achagach Stam, halacha k'stam. Usually the rule is within one Masechta, when you have a Machlokas and later on in the same Masechta, you have a Stam Mishnah according to one of the opinions, usually the halacha is like that opinion. So why all of a sudden do we have here a Mishnah that doesn't seem to be like Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara says, "Ve'ela Mayer Meir he." So what are you going to tell me then? Our Mishnah is going according to the Meir, who says that you can eat till the end of the fifth hour, and that's also the time during which you can feed it to animals, etc. In that case, the wording of the Mishnah doesn't work. Hai kol shosh mutter lechol machil. Then why is the Mishnah using the expression, as long as you're allowed to eat, you can feed? It should say a shorter lashon, as we learned at the beginning of the Sefer. You're supposed to teach derech tzar. It should say kol shah sha'oichel, as long as you can eat, as long as he eats, machil, he can feed. Why have the word shemutter lechol? Why the extra word? So it doesn't seem to work according to the Meir either. So the answer is Amar Rav Abba Ula Masnisin Rav Gamliel. Our Mishnah goes like Rav Gamliel, which is the third opinion that we had over there. The Tanan, we learned in the previous parak, Rav Gamliel Omer Cholin Ne Cholin Kol Arba. Rav Gamliel said, when it comes to Cholin, then yes, like Rav Yehuda, you can only eat till the end of the fourth hour. Truma Kol Chomish, but when you have Chometz, which is Truma, and there you have a mitzvah to guard it as much as possible and not destroy it unless you really need to. There you give it an extra hour. The certain mitzvah stage, and you burn only at the beginning of the sixth hour. So therefore, our Mishnah, the wording of it is according to Rav Gamliel. V'hachi kamar. So the Mishnah implies as follows: Kol shasha mutter lechol koyin b'truma. It's not kol shasha oichel, as long as you can eat. Machu, you can feed your animals. Kol shasha mutter lechol, as long as there's somebody who's able to eat. Namely, koyin b'truma. Namely, that the koyin is allowed to eat truma. During that time, Yisrael machol cholin l'behem l'chai o'loifin. During that time, Yisrael is allowed to feed domestic or wild animals or birds. So the Mishnah is going after Rav Gamliel. Nevertheless, that doesn't mean the halacha is like Rav Gamliel. Again, in the Gemara previously on Daf Yud Gimel, we said the halacha is not like Rav Gamliel, because even though it seems that he's a machria, he's taking a middle ground between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. We said no, ein hachras shlishis machras. It's not a valid machria, either because Rabbi Gamliel belongs to an earlier generation, so he's obviously not referring to what Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are saying, or because, as Rashi had said over there, he's bringing in a new factor that neither of them mention. He's mentioning Truma versus Cholin. Neither of them even mention that factor, which means they don't consider it a significant factor. In other words, if Rabbi Meir had said, whether Cholin or Truma, you can eat till the end of the fifth hour, and Rabbi Yehuda had said, whether Cholin or Truma, only till the end of the fourth, then it would show, okay, we agree, in theory, there might be a reason to distinguish between Cholin and Truma. However, we don't consider that to be a valid distinction. We don't accept that we're going to make a distinction in that. We're going to say across the board. Then Rabbi Gamliel can come and say, you know what, given that you yourselves agree that there is a reason to mention Cholin and Truma separately, then I'm going to say that one rule applies to Cholin and the other one to Truma. But since they didn't mention it at all, then it comes out he's mentioning a whole different factor, and that's not called a hachra. That's not called that he's making a compromise between them. So the Gemara had said over there, the halacha is not like Rabbi Gamliel. So even though we have the usual rule, machlokas v'achakastam, halacha kastam, but in this case, the halacha does not end up being like Rabbi Gamliel. It ends up being like Rabbi Yehuda, both cholin and truma. You can only eat until the end of the fourth hour. But then you have one more hour in which you can feed it to animals and sell it to goyim and so forth.
We still do have that.
We still do have, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that during the fifth hour,
when it's toilet,
exactly, you're allowed to do all these things, right? Okay. Now, the question is, lomali the misni behema, lomali the misni chaya. Why did the Mishnah have to mention behema and chaya separately? So the answer is tzricha. We need both of them. De'i tona behema. If the Mishnah had only mentioned behema, you wouldn't necessarily know from that you could feed it to chayas as well, because the difference is the imishaira, because if a domestic animal leaves over any of the chametz, chazila, he's going to see it, and then he'll know to take it away and destroy it. Abo chaya, but when it comes to a chaya, the imishaira kamatzna Allah. If you give it to a chaya and it has some left over, it may hide it away. So then Eimaloi, you would think maybe you shouldn't give it to a chaya, because then you're going to have chametz in your house during Pesach.
Now it's in his property.
That's the point. Now, Tosfos points out that he wouldn't necessarily be over on, we've touched on this Tosfos before, that he's not necessarily over on, at least on Bal Yerah. He's not going to be over on Bal Yomotze, because we had Bal Yerol, Bal Yomotze. Bal Yomotze, that shouldn't be found in your possession, he's not going to be over on, because that would only be if he himself hid it away. In this case, the Chaya hid it away, so he's not going to be over on that. It is true, though, Tosfos says, once he finds the Chametz, then he would be over on Bal Yerol. So therefore, you would think that maybe you're not allowed to feed it to an animal, to a wild animal, because you might end up potentially being over on Bal Yerah.
But the Chaya is not going to keep, the Chaya is a wild animal.
But it's a wild animal that you have, but it's a wild animal that you have in your possession, that you have, let's say it's not tamed per se, but it's not really domesticated, but it's tamed. And then Rashi gives examples. For example, a Chaya would include, for example, a weasel, or a nemia, which is a creature like a marten or some creature like that, a chosel, a cat. Those creatures, if they have extra food, they tend to hide it away.
Yeah, so it's your house.
So it's in your house, right?
It's not outside. And
so actually, right. Tosfos also mentioned, now we did learn in the previous parak, that when you have chametz left over that you want to eat out of Pesach morning, you have to hide it away so a holder doesn't take it away. So Tosfos says, Tosfos gives an answer that you have a holder, let's say you have a holder that's running around wild in your house, like a mouse or whatever, that may hide away food. As opposed to if you have a domesticated holder that you raise, like for example, you think of people raise pet mice or hamsters or whatever, they're less likely to hide away food in places where you won't find it.
They usually
be in their cage, exactly. So, but even so, the point is, you're feeding them, so therefore they have less of a need. They feel less of a need in their little rodent brain to have to hide away food, because they know they have a regular food supply anyway. So that's one answer. There's other answers as well. One of them being that maybe the chayas we're talking about over here are other kinds of creatures, not necessarily a cholda. For example, now both Rashi and Tosfos had mentioned a cholda, but maybe a chayas includes other kinds of animals that are not as given to scurrying around all over the place with food. Anyway, there is a different explanation. The Maharam Chalava talks about in connection with our Gemara over here. The problem is not so much that it may hide away the chametz per se. The question is, if you find it, are you apt to eat it? We learned in the previous perek, one of the reasons why you have to do bedikas chametz in the first place is shema yimtza glus geyofa. You might find a nice loaf of bread and decide to eat it. So here, do you have a problem that the wild animal may hide it away? The problem is not bal yiro or bal yimotze. Fine, as long as it's hidden. But if you find it, might you eat it? And then you can have a problem. So therefore, the chiddush of the Mishnah is, nevertheless, you're allowed to give it to a chaya. Obviously, you have to take steps to make sure that the chaya doesn't hide it away in a place where you're not going to find it.
Are you not associated that it was hidden by a chaya and it's disgusting, you wouldn't eat it?
Well, you might not. I mean, in those days, people were less picky, you know, they might, yeah. Okay.
Because the chaya, it finishes most of it.
So that's why it needs to mention chaya. The itona chaya, on the other hand, if it mentioned only chaya, you would say, you know why? In a way, a chaya is better. Okay, look, if the chaya does leave it over, it will hide it away. And again, so for example, according to Tosfos, then you won't be over on bal yimotze at all. Bal yiro, you're only going to be over on if you actually find it. So if you don't find it, then you're good. Aval behema zimnin de mashaira, but with a behema, not only it might leave over, v'loy masika daita, you might not even realize that it left it over. It's not going to hide it away. It's right there in the trough or whatever way you fed it, and you don't realize. V'koyale b'bal yiroa b'bal yimotze, then you are actually over on b'bal yiroa b'bal yimotze because it is seen and it is visible in your possession, and you forgot about it. Emaloy, so you would think maybe not. Tzricha, so therefore it needs to mention a behema as well. So both the behema and chaya, you're allowed to feed chametz during that time. You just have to make sure they don't take it away and hide it, and you have to make sure you clean up whatever's left afterwards. Then,
the behema, you're going to give a bigger portion, and he leaves over bigger pieces, and isn't it easier to see it?
You might forget. You might not realize. You might think, well, I gave the animal the normal amount that I give it every other day, and you don't chapsich that. You know what? It might be. On the other hand, this time it wasn't as hungry, and maybe it left some over. So then, oifas lomali, why does it need to mention birds as well? Okay, the answer is, I did the tana, behema v'chaya, tana nami oifas. Once it mentions behema v'chaya, then it mentions oifas for completeness' sake. But you're right, there's no real chiddush that you're allowed to give it to birds, because yeah, they would be in the same category. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, moichrei l'nochri, you're allowed to feed the chametz during that, you're allowed to sell the chametz during that time to a goy. So the Gemara asks, pshita, obviously, if you can have hana from it, you can sell it to a goy. The answer is la puki mehai tana. The Mishnah wants to tell us not like the following tana. The Tanya, Beshama umim, lo yimker odim chametze v'nochri. Beshama says that even before Pesach, a person is not allowed to sell his chametz to a goy, ele imken yedea b'ashi yichla kodim Pesach, unless he knows that there's enough time for the goy to be able to finish off the chametz during Pesach. But before Pesach, rather. So even though, yeah, you're doing mechiras chametz, so Beshama would not allow our present day mechiras chametz. When we go and sell all the chametz to the goy, and there's no possibility that he's going to eat all of it before Pesach. Most of the time, he doesn't even come in.
It
stays in our house, exactly. Beshama wouldn't allow such a thing. They would say it has to be done in such a way that he actually finishes it off before Pesach.
If a lot of them like Beshama, they'll be in trouble.
Yeah. But Beshilo says, like our Mishnah, no, kol shal shemutar lechol mutar limker, as long as you're allowed to eat chametz, you're allowed to sell it. Therefore, you're still allowed to sell it during that time. The goy is still going to have it in his possession, not your problem. Then the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, kutach. Now, kutach is a dip. It's a dip. It's mentioned in a lot of places in the Gemara. In particular, we're going to mention it at the beginning of the third parak of our Masechta. It was made out of sour milk and breadcrumbs, which often became moldy, and salt. So that's specifically kutach habavli. That's specifically mentioned of the kutach habavli. There were different recipes for kutach out there, which is why he says over here, kutach v'chomene kutach, the one kind of kutach, which is kutach habavli, as well as every other kind of kutach, but all of them have this in common, that breadcrumbs is part of the recipe. Or even if breadcrumbs aren't, Rashi says they put in it breadcrumbs, but it could even be, maybe you don't even specifically put in breadcrumbs, but as you dip bread in it, inevitably there are crumbs left in it. Whatever the case, he says, also limker shloshim yom kodim lePesach. You're not allowed to sell those to a goy within 30 days before Pesach. Rashi says then that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is following Beis Shammai. He's saying, Beis Shammai is saying chometz in general. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is adding even kutach. Even kutach, it's only a dip, but because you don't eat it that quickly, then therefore, within 30 days before Pesach, which is the time when the chiyuv of a beer applies, because as we learned in the first parak, 30 days before Pesach is when you start learning about Hilchos Pesach. So at that point, you're also to sell it to a goy. That's fine. It belongs to the goy, but nevertheless, because it originally belonged to a Jew, and Beit Shammai is saying in general that any chometz, you're not allowed to sell it to the goy unless he can finish it before Pesach. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda is saying, for example, kutach, because it's not eaten that quickly, because the dip, it takes time for it to get used up. Therefore, you can't sell it to a goy 30 days before Pesach. On the other hand, Tosfos learns that no, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda is talking according to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel is allowing you to sell it to the goy even at the last moment, but Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda says, most chametz I can agree with that, but kutach not. Because everybody knows that it was originally so-and-so's kutach. So they're going to think that he sold it on Pesach through a goy, or maybe that he sold it directly to a goy. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda is saying, regular chametz, fine, you can sell to a goy even at the last moment, but kutach not.
Do you know who made the kutach?
They will know who made the kutach, I guess, because maybe everybody has their own slightly different recipe, or maybe, I don't know, whatever it is. Tosfos says that that people are going to know that it's Pliny's kutach, and therefore that's no good. In fact, by the way, Tosfos refers to, at the beginning of the next parak, we're going to talk about an opinion of Rabbeinu Tam that says, in Tosfos over there, that actually, even though you're obviously not allowed to eat kutach during Pesach, it's got breadcrumbs in it, but Rabbeinu Tam learns in the Mishnah, over there, that you're allowed to have it around in your house on Pesach. That even though it's only taruvas chametz, it's not actual chametz. It's only something that has a mixture of chametz in it. And Rabbi Tam learns that you actually are allowed to have it in your house on Pesach. That would make our Pesach preparations a lot different, obviously, if we could have things around in the house that have taruvas chametz. But anyway, so even that, even though, according to him, you're allowed to have it in your possession during Pesach. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda is saying, but you still can't sell it to the goy within 30 days before Pesach.
Because
you yourself would be allowed to have it around, but to sell it to a goy shortly before Pesach, where during Pesach he's going to have it, and people are going to think that you sold it to the goy during Pesach when it's also banah, that you can't do.
Are you keeping your house? The Bayirah B'Matzah doesn't.
But then fine. According to Tosfos, Bayirah B'Matzah only applies to Chametz Be'ein. We'll talk about that in the beginning of the next paragraph. Okay.
The halacha is like
the halacha is not like Rabbeinu Tam in that, obviously. But yeah. Okay. Fine. Next. We said in the Mishnah, U'mutar B'Hanah, we said during the whole fifth hour, it's still mutar B'Hanah. So the question is pshita. Obviously, if you're allowed to feed it to a goy, and if you're allowed to feed it to an animal, and you're allowed to sell it to a goy, that is Hanah. So the answer is loit sricha shachorchei kodim zmanu. The chiddush of the Mishnah is when it says mutter, it means there's a case where even where you're able to do something during the zman that makes it still mutter even after the zman. Namely, shachorchei kodim zmanu. If you singe the chametz, so now you made it has no more tam and it has no more appearance of chametz. So it hasn't become total ashes. It's still someplace in there. There might still be recognizable bread, but because you did that before Zmanoi, then it's mutar b'hanah even after Zmanoi. In other words, in effect, Rashi says the words in the Mishnah, mutar b'hanah, are actually referring to the next part of the Mishnah. When it said, the Mishnah had said, mutar b'hanah, and then it continues, over Zmanoi, once the time passed, then also b'hanah. But what we do is we read the word mutar b'hanah going together with over Zmanoi. There is a way where even Ovas Mane, it's mutar b'hanah, namely if you burnt the outside of it before Pesach, before the sixth hour.
After that, you can give the animal seeds?
No, well, at that point, it's not really edible by animals anymore, but the point is, you're still able to have hanah from this reasonably well-burnt chametz. The kamash malon kidur rabba. So therefore, the Mishnah wants to tell us what Rava says. The Amar Rava, Chorcha Kodim Zman. If you singe the chametz before the Zman, when it's also Mutar B'Hanah, Afilu L'Acha Zman, then it will be Mutar B'Hanah even after the Zman, because already at that point, you've taken away the tam and the appearance of it. It doesn't have the taste or the appearance of chametz anymore. In fact, Tosfos says that actually, it's not so simple. From Rashi, it seems that it would be, even if it still is in principle edible, just that it doesn't have the appearance or the taste of chametz anymore. Tosfos says that no, we have to be talking about where it's not roi l'achilas kelev anymore. Where you burnt it enough. It may not be burnt completely to ashes, but it's burnt enough that even a dog wouldn't eat it. Otherwise, Tosfos says, it would be like bread that went moldy, and we learned in the previous parak that that is also. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Next, the Mishnah had said, over zmanay osabahana. So once the time passes, then it's osabahana. So again, the question is pshita. Obviously, if we said that it's mutter up to the time, then that means it's also after the time. The answer is, loitzricha l'shoris d'rabbanan. The chiddush of the Mishnah is, even during the time when it's only also d'rabbanan, namely during the sixth hour. Remember, midaraisa, it's only also from the beginning of the seventh hour, from chatzos. During that last hour, after both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda say that it's also bahana, at that point, it's also bahana midarabbanan, you still have an hour. During that hour, it's still muta bahana, and even to eat, midaraisa. So that's the chiddush, that even during that time, it's completely also bahana, and that means the Omer of Gidol Omer Rav, like Rav Gidol said in the name of Rav, which we learned in the previous perek, hamakadish mishesh shoris lamayla. If a person takes chametz and is makadish a woman with it any time from the beginning of the sixth hour and on, afilo b'chutei kudinisa, even if he's using wheat of kudinisa, which is very hard, tough wheat, but if it became wet, we still have to be concerned that it might become chametz like any other wheat. Therefore, ein choshesh in the kiddushin, we're not concerned about the kiddushin, because since the chachamim asked it, then it means it has no monetary value. Rashi had used the expression before that the chachamim are mafkia the kiddushin. The chachamim undo the kiddushin and say they're not valid because he was using something which is also bahanam adirabam. Actually, we talked about over there, Rashi and Tosfos argue, what do we mean over here? Do we mean that the point is that it's real chametz daraisa, but it's during the time which is only also d'rabbanan, or Tosfos actually had learned over there that mishesh shoris v'mayla actually means after the end of the sixth hour, the time when real chametz is also d'araisa. But chitei kudinisa over here is not regular chametz, it's something called chametz nuksha. It's hard chametz, it's not really edible, because this is very hard, tough wheat. Even if it becomes wet and ferments, as wheat does when it becomes wet, it's not really edible chametz. Nevertheless, because it's already after the time when it's also daraisa, then therefore it's still considered, then the chachamim still asur. In other words, daraisa, after that time, only regular chametz would be asur. Chametz nuksha might not. The chachamim asur chametz nuksha as well. In fact, the Ran points out an interesting possibility. What if it's chametz nuksha and it's before the set and it's before chatzos? Maybe since you have two derabanans, since it's two derabanans, maybe it would be valid kiddushin. But so according to Rashi, the main thing we're focusing on over here is the time. According to Tosfos, the main thing we're focusing on over here is the type of chametz that it is.
So, but if it's rabbanan, if it's at that hour,
so during that hour, it's derabanan. So that's the thing. So Rashi is saying, so that's the point. Both Rashi and Tosfos are agreeing that the Gemara is saying over here, when it's only also derabanan, it's still, there's no kiddushin. But the question is, what is it that makes it only an issur derabanan? Is it the fact that it's before the time, that it's during the sixth hour, or is it, as Tosfos says, it's after the sixth hour, but it's chametz nuksha rather than regular chametz? Okay. Then the Mishnah had said, v'loyasik v'tanu v'chirayim, you're not allowed to use this chametz after this man to fire up an oven or a stove. So the question is pshita. Obviously, if you're not allowed to have hana, means you're not allowed to fire a stove with it. The answer is Leitzricha L'Rabbi Yehuda. Yes, but the Chiddush of the Mishnah is specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Omar, where he says in the next part of the Mishnah, Ein Bi'ur Chometz El Sreifa, that the only valid way of destroying Chometz, where you're Mekayim Mitzvah of Tashbisu, is by burning it. So you would think, Sakdad Hamina, Hoyov Omar Rabbi Yehuda Mitzvah Sebe Sreifa, since Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the right way to the only way to destroy it is by burning it. So Bahadi the Kasarif Levis Hani Mine. So you would think maybe while you're burning it, you can also have hana from it. You can put it in your oven and then use it to heat up your oven, and then afterwards be able to bake with the oven. Kamash Malan, that is the Chiddush. Even Rabbi Yehuda is saying you can't do that. Now, why indeed not? The point Tosfos refers to like this. You have a concept like this. There are various Isurei Hana in the Torah. Some of them you have a mitzvah to burn them. For example, noisa. You're not allowed to eat noisa of a korban. And the Torah tells you, if you have noisa of a korban, you have a mitzvah to burn it. Then you have certain other things that are also in the Torah where the din is you have to bury them. For example, one example is a bechor that died without proper shechita, where the din is without developing a mum, and without being shechted properly, is you have to bury it.
Only.
Now, the rule is, now one important difference is that things that the Torah says you have to burn implies you're allowed to have hanah from the ashes. things that the Torah says you have to bury, you're not allowed. If you chose to burn them, you're still not allowed to have a noah from the ashes. So you would think, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that since ein biyochametz el ha-sreifa, that means it's one of the nisrafim.
Oh, okay.
So therefore, you would think that you should be able to have hanah while you're burning it from the ashes. Therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that not. According to the Rabbanon, who say that you can be that you don't necessarily have to be mevayer chametz with sreifa, you can be mevayer it anyway. Then obviously, according to them, there's no chiddush. Of course, according to them, you can't have hanah from the ashes because there's not even a particular mitzvah to burn it. That's how Tosfos learns. There are other rishonim who learn that the Chiddush would even be according to the Chachamim. The fact is, the Chachamim do agree you're allowed to burn it. They just say you don't have to. So therefore, still, you would think you could have enough from it while you're burning it. And the Chiddush is that, and therefore, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is that you're not allowed to.
But obviously, yeah. If you did it still 5 minutes before.
So if we said, if we did it before this man, once you burnt it, once chorchoy, then it's mutar b'hanah. If it's lachas manah, so then yeah, you would be able to use the ashes or whatever of it after this man. But we're talking about if you're burning it at this man, at the sixth hour, then you're not allowed to have hanah from it while you're burning it.
Yeah, but if it's burnt before the
sixth hour, then
and the oven now is ready to bake because you used chametz to make it hot.
So as well, you did it before this man. I mean, we're going to talk later in the parrot. We're going to talk in the next couple of blocks about cases where you have zev zeh gerdim. If you have two things that join together to create something that's mutter and something that's also, what's the din about? We're going to have that later on in the parrot. So let's say, for example, you did take chametz and use it to fire up an oven. Is the bread that you bake in that oven also, or maybe not? Since after all, part of what goes into it is the oven, which is mutter. So we'll get to that point in a few blocks. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now let's talk about a general thing about, we're saying that chametz is also b'hanah after a certain time. But where do we know that from? And by the way, Tosfos actually brings that later on in the Perek, we're going to learn that Rabbi Yossi Aglili actually allows, Rashi and Tosfos both mentioned, later on in the Perek, we're going to learn that Rabbi Yossi Aglili says chametz is actually mutar b'hanah the whole Pesach. The halacha is not like him, but there is such an opinion. But the mainstream opinion, and that's the halacha, is that chametz is also b'hanah. Where do we see that from? So the Gemara says, "Amar Chizkia, minayin l'chametz for Pesach she'also b'hanah." Where do we know that chametz on Pesach is also b'hanah? That you can't eat it. Obviously, the Torah says, "Kol machmetzes lo yisechelu." But where do we see you're not allowed to have b'hanah? Shenema lo ye'ochel chametz, because the pasuk says chametz should not be eaten. Now, if the Torah had said lo yisechelu chametz, then not necessarily it would mean you're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to have other b'hanah. Lo ye ochel, it shall not be eaten. It means you're not allowed to have any hanah from it that could come to eating. Now, usually, what does hanah involve? For example, you sell something and then you take the money and you can use it to buy food. You have a similar concept, by the way, in Hilchas Nedarim. For example, you have a person makes a neder not to have hanah from somebody else. Hanah hamavil de Michael, then he's allowed to have certain kinds of hanah from the other person, but not any hanah that could lead to Michael, any hanah that would save him money, which conceivably then he could use to buy food with that money. So here it's a similar kind of thing, but we're saying even more so. Almost any hanah is going to lead to, in fact, some of the Mefarshim, I think Maharam Chalava and others say, even for example, let's say you're not talking about selling it. Let's say, for example, we just said using it for firewood, let's say. You're gaining that now. You don't have to buy firewood. Therefore, you're gaining something monetarily, which you could use that money for food. And therefore, by saying lo ye ochel, the Torah is implying you can't do that either. So lo yehebay heter achila, there's no heter of anything that could lead to eating. So the Gemara asks, taima dekasi rachmana lo yeochel chametz. Okay, so the implication that Chizki is telling us is that only because the Torah said lo yeochel, then that's why you're not allowed to have hanah. Ha lekasi lo yeochel hava amin isur achila mashma isur hanah lo mashma. But if it hadn't used that, if it had just said, for example, lo yeochel chametz or something to that effect, then it would mean just that you can't eat it, but you could have hanah. Now, given that, upliga de Rabba Bohu. In that case, what Chizki is saying disagrees with what Rabba Bohu says. The Amar Rabba Bohu, because Rabba Bohu says here's a different way. We know that it's not just chametz. Anything, kol makam shenema lo ye'ochel, or lo soichal, or lo soichlu, whenever the Torah says about something that it's also to eat, or it's also to be eaten, or whatever, any of those lashonis means echad isur achila ve'echad isur hanah mashma. Automatically, it implies that you can't eat it and that you can't have hanah. Ad she yifar et l'cha, kosev kederech shepar et l'cha menevela. Unless the Torah specifies that's mutar b'hanah, like it does with nevela. So therefore, according to Rabba Bo, you don't need any, you don't, it doesn't need to say lo yet ochel. According to Rabba Bo, it could have just said lo soichlu chomets, and automatically that would be an isur hanah. That's what we're going to talk about. Well, that's treif actually, is like elav tash lechonos. So we're going to get to that later. But yeah, so by nevela, the Torah specifies that you're allowed to have hanah from it. Therefore, that's an example where the Torah says that you're not allowed to eat something, but you're not allowed to have hanah. But other than that, Rabba Bo says, when the Torah says you're not allowed to eat something, automatically it means you can't have hanah from it either. And therefore, once it says, so even if it had said lo soichal chametz, it would already mean that you can't have hanah. Not like Chizkiyah that says only because it says lo ye ochel. Yeah. So what's by nevela? The Tanya we learn in a brisa. When the pasuk says like this, lo soichlu kol nevela, you're not allowed to eat any nevela. Like ger asher b'sharecha titnana va'achala, you can give it to the ger that lives in your cities, a ger meaning here ger toshav. Or you can sell it to an out and out goy, meaning not a ger toshav, but a goy who still worships Avodah Zarah. So now the Braisa says, now what do you have? It says you can give it to the ger or you can sell it to the goy. Based on that pasuk, you would only know that to a ger toshav, you daft have to give it for free, and to a nochri, you daft have to sell it. How do we know la ger b'machira minayin? How do we know you're allowed if you want to sell it to the ger toshav rather than giving it to him for free? Therefore, the pasuk phrases it like this: la ger asher b'sharecha titnena oy mocher. In other words, you look at the order in the pasukim like this: you have ger. You have the word titnena, you should give it. Then you have the word mocher, sell it. And then you have lanochri, the goy. So you have the order, ger, give, sell, goy. So that allows us to darshan the word oy mocher as if it went with the ger as well. To say, like ger, shebisharacha, titnena, oy mocher. You can give it to the ger who lives in your cities, meaning ger toshav, or you can sell it to him. Same thing, lanochri ben asinaminai, and where do we know that you're allowed to, if you want, give it for free to the goy. Because again, since you have the order is give, then sell, then it mentions the goy. So the implication is that both of them are mutter to do for the goy. You're allowed to the nochri, the one who still worships Avodah Zarah. Nimtseisa oimer, so it comes out. So it comes out, the mayor says, the bottom line is, whether a ger toshav or whether a goy, you can do whichever you want. You can give it to him for free or you can sell it. That's true of the ger toshav. It also is true of the goy who worships Avodah Zarah. According to him, you have four possibilities, according to the mayor. Rabbi Yehuda on the other hand says, no, Devarim Kiksavon. The Pasuk means exactly what it says. Forget about Darshan in the word Titnena as referring to both of them, or the word Mocher as referring to both of them. No, it means exactly what it sounds like. Like Ger ben Asinav ala Nochri b'mechira. To the Ger Tosha, you daft have to give it to him for free. To the Goy, you daft have to sell it to him because, now the Gemara elsewhere, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah talks about that you have a concept in Halacha called Loi Sechonim. You're not allowed to give a goy, an Ovid Avodah Zarah, a free gift. So therefore, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying, that's what it means, therefore. So if you give the goy, the nevela as a free gift, then you're over on that. So therefore, it dafka has to mean with him that you sell it to him. As far as the ger toshav, there are actually different understandings of Rishonim. Doesn't mean that the ger toshav, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, you dafka have to give it to him. You're not allowed to charge him for it, or maybe you would be allowed to charge him for it. Maybe the ikur thing is, to the nochri, you can't give it for free, because that's loisach on him, but for the ger toshav, you have your choice. If you can get him to pay for it, then fine. If not, then you give it to him for free.
You're somebody befriending him when you give it as a present.
So if you give it to him as a present, then you're over on loisach on him. You're giving him a present for free.
The reason behind it is,
yeah, because the Torah doesn't want you to become over-friendly with them. Right? Okay, so let's analyze my time of the Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that it's not interchangeable? You can't give it for free to the Nochri and maybe not sell it to the Ger Toshav. So because Isak Daidach Kida Amar Rav Meir, because Rabbi Yehuda says, if you were to think the Pasuk means, like what Rav Meir says, that you can do either one for either type, Lichte Rachmana, La Gera Shebisharacha Titnena Ba'achola, Umacher, then the Pasuk should say, you should give it to the Ger, the Ger Toshav, who lives in your cities, you can give it, Va'achola, and he'll eat it, Umacher, and sell it. So then it would clearly mean that you have your choice whether to give it to him or to sell it to him. Oy lomali, why instead does the pasuk say give it to him or sell to the guy? Shmamina the dvarim k'ksavim. The or breaks it up and means we're talking two separate things. One, what you're allowed to do with the ger toshav, namely to give it to him. The other, what you're allowed to do with the nachri, sell it to him. And they're two separate things. There's no mix and match, says Rabbi Yehuda. Vera Meir. So what does Rabbi Meir answer to that? He says, oi. I agree, of course, the pasuk says the word oi, but I'm doubting it differently. It comes to teach us that if you have a choice, if you have a ger toshev to give it to, and on the other hand, you have a goy who's willing to pay for it, you should give it to the ger toshev rather than selling it to the goy. So that's the pasuk is telling us, the oi, meaning in other words, it's not completely interchangeable. The better thing to do is to give it to the ger toshev. Now, Tosfos elsewhere talks about that's not a general thing across the board. We don't say in general, if you have something that you as a Jew can't use, that you should have to give it to a ger toshev ahead of selling it to a goy. This is a special case. Tosfos elsewhere in Cholin talks about, because after all, you don't really have a lot of nochrim, a lot of goyim who worship Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. After all, you're not allowed to leave goyim who worship Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. The whole point why a ger toshev is called that is because once he accepted that he's not going to worship Avodah Zarah, or in general the Sheva Mitzvahs, a couple different opinions, what it takes to make him a ger toshev, then he's allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael. That's what we mean by Sharecha. He lives in your cities. So therefore, the Torah is telling you that rather than going and finding a goy who maybe might happen to be traveling throughout Yisrael and selling him the nevela, better you should give it to your local ger toshev. That doesn't necessarily apply to other things that we would say that usually you have a mitzvah to do that. After all, you know, you're entitled to make a living. You're entitled to find somebody who'll buy it for a few bucks.
But you could sell it to the ger toshev.
So in this case, so if you can't find the ger toshev, then you're allowed to. Then Rav Meir says you're allowed to sell it. You're allowed to sell it to the nachri. But it's still better. You should give it to the ger toshev. Even though if you have a nachri available and you can sell it to him, you're going to earn a few bucks. But nevertheless, you have a mitzvah to give it to the ger toshev first.
This whole thing we learned about Erev Chatzeres, about a guy that's a regular guy.
No, so there, when it comes to Erev Chatzeres, we're talking about any kind of guy, whether he worships Avodah Zarah or not. That's a different thing, because we said we don't want Jews to live together with goyim and they're going to learn from their ways. That applies even if it's a ger toshev.
Even though it's not Avodah Zarah.
Even though he's not worshiping Avodah Zarah, but it's still, you know, he's still as, yeah. So there's a few different opinions in the Gemara of what it takes for a person to be a ger toshev. Does he just have to renounce Avodah Zarah? Does he have to accept all the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach? Does he have to accept only some of them? The halacha is he has to accept all of them to be a ger toshev. The Rambam also writes he has to accept them because the Eibishter gave them to Moshe Rabbeinu, not just, for example, because they're logical. The Rambam writes, if he only accepts them because they're logical, then he's not from the Chassidi or Masa Olam, and there's different Gersois in the Rambam, whether it's Veloy Mechachmehem, that he's not one of their wise men, or Ela Mechachmehem, he is at least one of their wise men, for having discovered that. But in any case, the halacha is we only accept the Ger Toshav when the Yovel is in effect. So ever since close to the end of the first Beis Mikdash, when the Yovel stopped because Shevet Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe were taken into Golus, and at that point you don't have all the Shvatim living in Eretz Yisrael. So from then on, there's no Yovel. So at that point, we can't accept Ger Toshev. Is the halacha? Okay. Anyway, so that's the point. So the Meir is saying that the Oy in the Pasuk is coming to teach us that there is a precedence of you. Preferably, you should give it to the Ger Toshev. If there's no Ger Toshev, then you can sell it to a goy. But it still means, in other words, according to the mayor, that you have your choice. You could, if you want, give it to the ger toshev or to the goy, or you could sell it to the ger toshev or the goy. Not like Rabbi Yehuda, that's dafka, to give it to the ger toshev or sell it to the goy. Okay, so for Rabbi Yehuda, so what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Why doesn't he say the word oy can teach us that you know, preferably you should give it to the ger toshev? He says, holay tzarech kura. You don't need a pasuk to tell us that. Kiven de ger atamatsugalach, you say. After all, a ger toshav, you have a mitzvah to help keep him alive. When the Torah tells us in Parshas Bahar that you have to help a poor person, that the expression in the pasuk is ger v'soshav v'chayimach. So whether it's a born yid or even if it's a ger toshav, you have a mitzvah to help him out with tzedakah or a loan or whatever, and make sure that he should be able to continue living among you. So therefore, there's no chiddush that you should give him the nevela and let him eat it. The nachri iyat mitzvah lach yosei, whereas a goy, you have no particular mitzvah to keep him alive. Yeah, okay, but nedak is shalom, you give him tzedakah, but that's not part of the din daraisa of helping him. So therefore, loit tzarech chra. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says you don't need a pasuk svara. It's a plain svara that therefore it should be that you should go ahead and give it to the ger tosha first. Actually, another point I forgot to mention from that Tosfos in Cholin, it's not just a matter of that you more commonly find ger tosha around. It's also a matter of a nevela is something which is worth. It can be worth a lot to the ger, to the goy or to the ger tosha. After all, it's a lot of meat. You know, and they're not. They don't have to eat after shechting meat, so therefore it's a significant thing for them. So therefore, you have a mitzvah to give it to them for. So therefore, you have a mitzvah to give it to the ger tosha for free, as opposed to other things where maybe the you know fine, it's something nice, but it's not something. It's not something so particularly valuable to him more than to anybody else. Then you'd be allowed to sell it to the goy. Then you'd be allowed to lachatchila sell it to the goy rather than looking for a ger tosha to give it to for free. Anyway,
if it's a lot of meat and it's expensive, I would say that. That's when you're...
No, but that's the point. For you as a Jew, it's not really worth much because you can't eat it anyway. For a ger tosha, on the other hand, it's something very valuable. That's the point. Anyway, so that's the point. In other words, so we see that Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda are arguing what the din is as far as an avela, but the point is the pasuk is saying that you can have hana from it. So we see, therefore, so that's what Rav Abahu was saying. In the case of an avela, the Torah specifies you can have anah from it because it's saying you can sell it to a nachri. Therefore, there when it says loy soichlu means dafka you can't eat it. But other than that, when the Torah says loy soichlu or loy soichal or loy yaochel means not hanah either. That's where we see that chametz is also banah, says Rav Abahu. Again, as opposed to Chizkiyah, who said only by chametz because it says loy yaochel, right? Okay, so the Gemara asks, "Bishleimer
la meir." So these other places, the reason why they are allowed to sell only because it specifically says.
Only because it specifically says that you're allowed to. Says Rav Abahu. So the Gemara asks, "Bishleimer la meir." Drama echad ger ve echad nachri bein mechira bein minasina. According to Rav Meir, who says that whether a ger or a nachri, you're allowed to sell it or you're allowed to give it. So you have four possibilities. So according to Rav Meir, we can understand mid itzrich kral la mishra nevela b'hana. Since the very fact that we need a pasuk to tell us that you're allowed to have anah from nevela, that implies ha kol isurin shabat torah asurin bein ba'achila bein ba'anah, then that would mean like Rav Abahu says, usually an isur, something that's also in a torah, is also to have anah from as well. Here the torah has to specify that you're allowed to sell it to the guy. El Rav Yehuda da'amul advarim shaksavan huda asa. But we have to ask, according to Rav Yehuda, who tells us, according to Rav Yehuda, how would Rav Abahu explain Rav Yehuda? Maybe according to Rav Yehuda, we would say the reason why it mentions Oy Machal Anachri is to tell us specifically a chumrah over here. Otherwise, you would think the only possibility would be to give it to the Ger Toshav. So the Torah is telling you that I'm machmir on you. You can't give it for free to the goy, but you're allowed to sell it to him. But otherwise you would have thought, fakir, that you can have any kind of hanah from it you want. You could give it to the goy for free if you want. So how is Rav Abahu going to understand Rav Yehuda? Ha kol isurin shabbat torah menolei dasurim hanah. So according to Rav Yehuda, how are we going to know that all other isurim shabbat torah are also hanah? Maybe over here, the Torah is not telling you that it's osur. Maybe the Torah is not telling you over here that's mutar b'hanah. The Torah is telling you there are things that you would have thought you're mutar to do. For example, giving it to a goy for free. And now I'm telling you, you're not allowed to. You daft have to sell it to him. But where do we see the general rule that anything that's also in the Torah is also to eat is usually also b'hanah? The answer is nafgalim rakelav tashlichu noisa. He would learn it from what you were mentioning before, the pasuk that it says by a tray for animal, that since it says you're not allowed to eat it, but it says rakelav tashlichu noisa, you throw it to the dog, implying now oisa is a meal. Oisa ata mashlich al kelav. It means you only throw treifa to the dog, the iata mashlich al kelav kol isurin shabbat torah. But you can't throw to the dog any other isurin shabbat torah, anything else where it says lois soichal, you're not allowed to throw it to the dogs, which would be having hana from it, because then the dog eats it and it's your dog and you're having hana.
What
was an
example?
So for example, any isurin shabbat torah, chametz, kilaya kerem, orla, there's lots of isurin hana shabbat torah, bas b'cholav, yeah. So that was the right. So Rashi says like this: without the word oisai, you wouldn't be able to darshan anything from that pasuk, because we would say the reason why the Torah says to throw treifa to the dog is the famous thing, the reward for the dogs, because they didn't bark layachatz kalav l'shoinei when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, and therefore the Torah rewards them with neveva. So without the word oisai, we wouldn't know that there's a miut that it applies only to treifa. But now that we have the word oisai, then Rav Abahu would understand Rav Yehuda to mean that the word oisai tells us it only applies to treifa, not to other isurim.
else is also.
Everything else would be also, right. Tosfos learns a little differently. The point is that the earlier in that pasuk where it mentioned bos basoda treifa, like say chelu, besides the concept of treifa, besides the concept that if an animal was injured or was sick or has various kinds of diseases or whatever, that you're not allowed to eat it, there's also, we learn various other dinim from it. For example, we learn the whole concept of basar shiyatza mechitzasai. You have meat that went out of its proper place. For example, chulin that were taken out of, for example, kodshim that were taken out of the azara. For example, Tosfos gives the example of a pregnant animal where the baby stuck out a limb from outside the womb, where the din is in all those cases, it's also. So without the word oisoi, we wouldn't know that we're limiting this concept of akelav tashlichon oisoi only to actual treifa. So Rabbi Boho would say, understanding Rabbi Yehuda, that's where we learn from that most Isurim Shabbat Torah are also Bahanah as well. When it comes to Nevela, the Torah is telling us you can sell it to a goy, not necessarily to be Makel, but to be Machmir, to say you can only sell it to the goy rather than give it to him for free. But nevertheless, we see the Torah is allowing you to sell it. That tells you, therefore, that that's an exception where you're allowed to have Hanah from it. Or actually, no, the exception rather is we're saying not from there, but rather from Treifa, that we're saying, Makelav Tashlichon Oisai, that it is something you're allowed to throw to the dog. Implying most other Yisur in Shabbat Torah, for example, Bos V'cholov or Kalaya Kerem or Ola or whatever, you're not allowed to. So that's it. So that's how he would learn it. So the mayor would learn it from the concept by Nevela, where it says that you're allowed to give it or sell it to the Ger Toshav or the Goy. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, would say by Nevela would be Machmer. The Torah is not coming to be Makel on you, but to be Machmer on you. The concept that you can have Hana from certain Yisur in Shabbat Torah, we learn from Akel of Tashlich Onaisa. So the question is, Rabbi Meir, what would Rabbi Meir answer to that? He would say, I agree there's a word oisoi in the pasuk, and it comes for a miut. But he says, no, that's a different miut. Oisoi at the mashlech hakelav, it means you're allowed to throw a tray for meat to the dog. The I at the mashlech hakelav, chulin shenishchatu ba'azara. What you're not allowed to throw into the dog is chulin that was shechted in the azara, which are also bahana. So now the Torah never says in so many words that you're not allowed to eat them. There's only an implication that if the Beis Mikdash is too far away from you, you're allowed to shecht an animal and eat it as cholin. So the implication is in the Beis Mikdash, you're not allowed to shecht an animal of cholin. So where do we know b'chlal that's also b'hanah? Rabbi Meir says from here. And therefore, since you have the word oisai, implies that cholin shenishchatu b'azara, not only you're not allowed to eat, but you're not allowed to have hanah from. In other words, Rashi says the connection is like this. Again, we just said that from the words obas basada treifa, we're learning the concept of basar sheyotza chutz lemchitzasei. We're saying there's meat that went out into the sada from the place it's supposed to be. This kodshim is supposed to be in the azara. This unborn animal is supposed to be in its mother's womb. And now some of it went out, and therefore it becomes aser. So the flip side of it is, on the other hand, there's something else which becomes aser on the grounds of mechitzis, but is aser to throw to the dogs, namely cholin shenishchatu ba'azara, where it's the opposite problem of kodshim that went out of the azara. It's something that shouldn't have been in the azara and was. That is also bahana, and you're not allowed to throw it to the dogs. Kodshim that were in the azara and went out,
it shouldn't
have been brought into the azara in the first place. It's cholin. A cholin animal. If you bring a cholin animal into the azara and shecht it over there, it becomes also bahana. And that's because of mechitzis. It was brought into the walls of the azara, and therefore it became also. So that's the implication. In other words, bos basada treifa. When you have meat that went out of its proper mechitza, then it becomes also. However, lakelav tashlichun oiso, you can throw it to the dog, but you have a different kind of meat which became also as a result of mechitzas, namely the other way around, cholin that was brought into the azara and shechted there, where that is also bana and also to throw to the dog. So that's what a mayor would say. That's what we're learning from the word oisai.
So he's using the word oisai
for that. The idach, what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He would say, cholin shenishchatu ba'azara, lav daraisi. That whole issur, cholin shenishchatu ba'azara, is not even an issur daraisi. It's only an issur darabanan. So obviously, therefore, the word oisai is not coming to tell us anything about that. It must be coming to tell us about actual treifa, that an actual treifa, an animal that was injured by a predator or whatever, or that has any of the other 70 conditions that make it treifa, is mutter bahana, and you can throw the meat to the dog, but not other isurim shabbat Torah. Okay. So that's the vidach. So now we've gone through.
Go back to the
so no, because now we know this because Rav Meir holds Daraisa and Rav Yehuda holds Darabon.
Oh, so okay.
So you have that underlying argument. Rav Meir holds Cholin Shenishchatu Ba'azara is also Daraisa. Therefore, he needs a pasuk to tell us that it's also Bahana, and that's he uses the word Oisei for that. Rav Yehuda holds Darabon, and therefore he doesn't need the word Oisei for that. He can use the word Oisei about Trefa versus other Isurim Shabbat Torah. Rav Meir, who doesn't need the word Oisei, Rav Meir, who used the word Oisei for that, he learns that other Isurim Shabbat Torah are also Bahana from the case of Nevela, from the fact that we say that by Nevela, you can give it or sell it to a Goy or a Ger Tosha.
Only that you could, but...
So that you could, but other things you couldn't, right. So now we'll continue. In the Gemara tomorrow, we'll continue with various other things that we see. Now again, Rabbi Bohu is telling us a general rule. Any time that something is also in the Torah to eat, then you're not allowed to have enough from it unless the Torah otherwise specifies. So we're going to start going through a bunch of things where the Torah says you're not allowed to eat something, and we see that they are mutabana. Now we know there are certain isuri achila that are in fact also bana. Kilaya kerem is one of them, bas b'cholov is another one, but we know there are many things in the Torah that the Torah says you're not allowed to eat, but you are allowed to have hanah from. So how does that fit with Rabbi Bohu's rule? So that's what we're going to start discussing tomorrow, Rav Hashem.
Shkaya.